the hardest bit of all of this is that I know that my family listens to this, and this is stuff that I've never spoken about before. God, I wish my mom wouldn't hear this. Sorry, mom.
Flex Lewis, you're straight out of the land. Today's guest is a champion. He is a new current and undisputed world's strongest man. During our conversation, I'm shocked by his humility, vulnerability, and thoughtful philosophy. He shares with us his relationship with his athletics, his fiancée, and how his connection to humanity has deeply changed throughout his journey. He reveals the sacrifices he's made, the journey he embraces, and the pain that he endures both physically and mentally. He's a man whose intellectual and emotional force exceeds his physical capacity, and that's saying a lot when you're the world's strongest man. On this episode, he gives so much of himself that I don't think anyone watching this will ever think of him the same again. Here's a podcast with the world's strongest man, Mitchell Hooper, straight out of the lair, the world's strongest man. My friend, it's great to have you here on the sofa. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you very much. And I did it despite you jinxing me many times over.
What do you mean?
So the video of us, it's pinned on my Instagram right now, but the video of us where it was Dirty Dancing, I lifted you up. That was the day before finals.
Correct.
And you said multiple times, I got a feeling. I got a feeling. I'm not posting this till after. I think this is going to go well for you. Mate, please stop. Please stop talking.
For everyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, myself and Mitchell Hooper, the day before the finals, met up at the hotel. We've been trying to get together for quite some time. We were supposed to meet up at the Arnold Classic. Unfortunately, you know, that never materialized. But you did end up just smashing that show as well. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. We were supposed to meet up there for the first time, but this has been some time in the making, a short time in the making. But nonetheless, when we finally met up, we were like, we've got to do something. We were on limited time. And if you remember, I had to run up to the room, get my Welsh shorts.
Yep.
It was adamant. Yep. You're like, bro, we don't have no time. I was like, hold on a minute. This is not getting done until I get my Welsh shorts.
Yeah.
And then we hit the beach, and obviously you guys seen it. I think that's up to now 1.3 million, I think, on Reels.
I think it's 1.7.
Really?
Something like that. It's up there. Yeah.
Well, if it's not, but you guys come and help us bump
it. Do you remember why I said I didn't have time?
Yeah, because you had a date night with a wife. And the family.
And guess who was not impressed in the least? I know her. I was right. I was 100% right.
Yeah.
She said, I don't know who that is. I don't know what you're doing.
Can we pull these texts back from the back in the day? I'd love to see how graphic they were.
No, it was face-to-face, unfortunately. Right. I'd much rather it's over text.
You're such a liar. I did see the text messages. You were on the beach and his wife was blowing him up saying, why are you late? He goes, I'll explain to you when I get five more minutes.
Yeah.
For 15, 20, 15.
We were supposed to leave at 6, and she was texting that at 6:15.
Yeah, we had a good time on that. But again, just to circle back on that, you were the chatter, you were the hype, not necessarily going into the world's strongest man as one of the front runners, don't get me wrong, but that weekend after you going through the heats and the rounds, I'm sorry, you were the chatter. So, of course, you and I speaking prior to me getting to the event, because I got there on the finals, day before the finals. We planned to meet, and again, like I said, I knew. Just hold that video back. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And my first finals, and I got to see you take home the gold, my friend.
Yeah, it's good. It was, if you know the events and you know what I'm good at, it was more than perfect performance. Personal bests across the board on a lot of things. Just perfect execution. Mm. And I actually that's probably the thing that I take most pride and most joy in is when you're just on the limit of whether you can do something or not, and you go under pressure and you do it. Win, lose, or draw, that's the number one feeling that I love to chase in terms of athletic accomplishment.
You go into the world's strongest man. Obviously, you came coming off a very impressive win at the Arnold Classic. What was the mindset going into the world's strongest man? Was it like, I am going to win, that mentality, or was it something else?
No, it's not about winning for me, because there's so much that's not in your control if you win or lose. If you get your tacky a bit wrong on the stones, is that because you're a worse strongman or something just happened? So I try not to put that pressure on it. But multiple athletes told me that they had me to win and they thought that I was going to win. And my general attitude was that for me, it's not about winning, but winning world's strongest man at some stage in your life, it changes your whole life. And there's only a certain number of years where you're in the position in terms of being able to train for it, having the capacity, being injury-free, all the variables lining up where you have a chance to win. And if you don't execute on that 3-4 times, it goes from you're one of the best of all time to, oh, you're a very good strongman who never happened to win. And in our sport, winning World's Strongest Man, you've either won it or you haven't. And if you've won it, you can make an entire life, career, living. You can be comfortable forever off of winning World's Strongest Man. And you try not to think about that, and you try to put that out of your head as much as possible. But in my estimation, I probably have 3 or 4 more chances at the most to win. And the odds that all of those go perfectly are very low. And I said I thought I had about a 25% chance to win.
25% chance to win?
Yeah.
So when I go back to my earlier statement of saying in the charters of not being the front runner to win is what I meant. Yep. But in many cases, in the circles of circles, Darren Sadler was one of them. He said, Mitchell Hooper can win this. He was one of the guys. So when I say he was like different people, but I think that was the most exciting thing about this year's World's Strongest Man. There were so many guys that had their eye on the target. Obviously, Brian Shaw, the story there with him finishing his and hanging his hat to high on the last World's Strongest Man competition. And then you've got the Stolten brothers coming in. It's multiple different stories coming in, Ukrainian guys. But again, you felt like all the stars were aligned and going through the rounds. Did you know, okay, going into this year, into the finals, this is going to be mine?
No.
Even still?
No. Because I had the most points ever in the heats. So 29 out of the 30 points. But the heats are, they're tailor-made for me where you move around a little bit more. It relies a little bit more on athleticism. And that's when I do really quite well. And the finals events, I was probably fifth. Let's just walk through. Day one, I thought there was probably 5 people who could win. It was either going to be me, Brian, Tom, Evan Singleton, or Trey Mitchell. I thought that one of those 5, I ran through the points. I had myself in second, half a point ahead of third, and I had Brian winning because these events for him were unbelievable.
Yeah.
And day one, I won the shield carry, I won the deadlift. So it started off really well. And then I came fifth in fingers, which basically put me and Tom tied. I think I had a 1-point lead, half a point lead, and he had a 1-point lead on Alexi. You basically call that a draw because in Worlds, the last event determines who wins. So if I tied with them and if I tied with Tom on points and he beat me in the Atlas Stones, then you lose. And Tom was always going to win the Atlas Stones. That's his thing. So I was basically tied with him going into day two. Even though I was in the lead after day one, I had a conversation with my coach and I was thinking podium would be great. Reason being, I was probably the 6th best dumbbell presser of that group, and I won. And the only other time I pulled a bus, I came 8th out of 10.
Just for the fans that are listening and who are new to the strongman, can we describe the first day of the finals event?
So
the shield carry is basically a rain-designed shield.
Yeah.
How much does that weigh?
That was 440. Yeah, 440. You carry that for distance. And it is very much a shield where it's got a narrow bottom. It's got a couple of, it juts out at the top so you can dig your forearms into it. You carry that for distance. And I was paired up against Tom, who had the world record in it. And it was pretty cool because we were actually the 2 favorites probably going into the finals. And I was struggling with it from the get-go. Tom took it about 63 meters. At that stage, I was about 50 meters. He drops the shield. He turns and he points number one at me. And for context, that's just what he does after every event when he does. It wasn't intimidation or anything. But I plodded my way along and ended up just nipping him by maybe a meter. And so I set the world record in that event. Then event number 2.
Let's just interject. Interject. Yeah. I was there.
Yeah.
Let me just summarize this. This was pissing down rain. There was 2 incredible athletes all going at it. And I didn't think that Tom was going to be beat in that event. And from what you just said, I don't think you even thought yourself you're going to beat Tom in that event. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But either way, when it came down to it and the crowd and all these different variables happened, Tom, when it was ahead of you, he put the shield down and then you kept on 1 foot at a time. It was just the atmosphere was incredible. Now, do you listen to anything like this? Do you allow that to motivate you, or are you just completely zoned out?
It's hard to hear anyone or feel anything.
Yeah.
I am aware of what's going on, but funny, the point at which I dropped it was basically directly in front of my family. And so my fiance was there, my mom was there, my stepdad was there. So I knew, it was almost like I had to take it to them. If I took it to them, I would have won. And that little bit extra motivates you for sure. But a lot of strong men, and I think people underestimate this about me, and it's probably my biggest strength. I approach everything pretty calm, pretty happy, but I would hazard the guess that my ability to endure pain is greater than 95% of the pro guys. Mm. And so when it actually boils down to it, you can't breathe, you're getting ready to pass out, your fingers are sore from holding the shield. To me, that's just part of the sport. That's just what we do. And so that grit is just, it is what it is. And to be honest, I knew that in those first two events, if I wanted to win, I had to win them. So in my head, I will be going, this is for World's Strongest Man. Yeah. This is to win the show. Yeah. You have to do this if you want to win. So yeah, that was event one. And that was probably, in terms of performance, that probably got the most attention of anything. Event number two is 800-pound deadlift for reps. And when you win an event, you have the advantage of going last on the next event. So I knew how many reps I had to do, which was eight with 800 pounds. And for me, that's really not a problem. No, sorry, I had to do seven. So I did seven. I had time to spare. It didn't take too much out of me and had a perfect start, 20 out of 20 points. But then the third event was the Fingles Fingers, and I had never done these before. I'd never touched them before. I actually built a wood Fingles Finger, which was like a 2 8x8 stuck together. And for people who don't know what that is, you basically flip one end over the other. One end is fixed on the ground. And I built it, and second session on it, I snapped the wood in half. It like came back and almost hit me in the head. And so I was a few sessions deep on fingers. I ended up coming sixth in that event, but I was 1 second off of coming third in that event. So I lost 3 points just on 1 second. And yeah, that's where we're going into day two. And I'm thinking, okay, these events in day two are not good for me. Mm. Hopefully I can hold on to the podium. At that stage, it was me, Tom Stoltman, Alexei Novikov, and Trey. Yeah. And I was looking the worst of all of us going into day two if you just look at performances on paper. So then first event on day two was the dumbbell. My personal best in training was 272 pounds. And even at 265, I was 50-50. Mm. So first dumbbell was 245. That was fine. Next dumbbell was 265. That was fine. I was very happy with that. And I'm using round numbers because we did it in kilos. But the next dumbbell, I was thinking, everything goes perfect. I hit this one. Then I hit that one. I hit the next one. I hit the next one. I took my personal best from 272 to 309. Jeez. On comp day. And that is, after I did that, I thought, okay, I'm in with a very good shot.
Yeah.
I still had the bus pull where I came 8th out of 10 last year. And then as the bus pull, it was the freakiest year for bus pull because we had 7 guys on 32 point something. So I was going last. I was going second last in the bus pull. And there was 6 guys at this stage on 32 point something. And Tom was the best. And Tom was in second at that stage. And so if I say I got 33.0, you're going to lose 6 points, lose my entire lead to Tom going into stones, and I would have lost World's Strongest Man. Thankfully, I trained really hard for it. I ended up with 30 seconds and 2 seconds clear of the next closest competitor. Went into the stones with a 6-point lead, and the rest is history. I had a really good stone run. Came second in the stone run, which last year at Worlds, I came 9th in the stone run. And so what makes me most excited moving forward is if I can stay disciplined, I can stay training hard. You don't go from 9th on a stone run to 2nd and 8th on a bus pull to 1st. You don't improve that much in 1 year and then just plateau forever.
Yeah.
I think I got a long way to go to actually get to the level where I say that's the best I'll ever be.
Now, you mentioned a couple of things, and I want to just home in on something right there. You said you've made vast and incredible improvements in 1 year.
Yeah.
What did you do? What was the difference, plan of attack, going into to this year compared to any other year?
I'm just new. I've only been doing this for 4 years. And when it comes to strength sports, a lot of people don't peak until 7 to 10 years after they start. So this is still, World's Strongest Man was 11 months after I became pro. And so I think it's just
crazy.
Yeah, and say the Worlds last year, I got invited when I had only done 4 local shows. So I had really only ever done a few stone runs with Tacky before. So naturally, you're going to do those a couple of times, you're going to improve. I'd only ever tried one kind of monster dumbbell before, and when you're exposed to different ones, naturally you're going to improve. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot of exposure. I don't know if I'm that much stronger than I was 12 months ago, but I'm just a much smarter athlete for it. And obviously the strength creeps up over time, but it's just execution. And I think that's mm-hmm. the important thing, is that your performance can vary a little bit physically, but psychologically, you could have vast differences in performance if you're unfamiliar with something, you get nervous about something, you fumble something. And that's, to me, that's the number one thing about performing really well, is keeping your mind about you.
one of the things I was most impressed about you on finals day was the fact that you were such a student of the game, of speaking to Darren and Colin about finding out what was going on so you could mentally plan. There was many occasions where obviously I was with the organizations, I was with the judges, that you came up and said, hey, what time is this happening? What time is this happening? And you were so, I could see what you were doing. You were just such utmost professional in everything you do, from the plan of attack, mental attack, to even when you were going to the graveyard. A lot of the athletes were saying that you were the first in to try and attack, try and figure out a way of picking this up. And ultimately, that's what you're trying to say, is that strength is strength, yes, but there's such a technique to all this. And this is what is new to you. And going back to what you said, you don't know if you were any stronger. I can suffice say you are. But this, the new techniques that you now are getting used to, and the more experience you are doing all these different shows, is what really propelled you in the last 3 to 4 years.
And look, if you take every other sport and you take how they analyze things, and I've made my way around a lot of different sports. So I played golf at a very high level, American football in college. I was a pretty good marathon runner. I did a little bit of bodybuilding.
I'm going to talk about all of this.
I was so bad at
that. We ain't skipping any of this. We're going into this.
But say when we were doing the bus pull, the most important thing is figuring out the slope of the ground. Because once you get something rolling, if the ground is flat, you're fine. And say the ground goes up at the end, you know that you're going to have to save a little something in reserve so that you can give a good effort at the end.
Interesting.
And so in golf, when you read the green, you just get a level on your phone. And when you're practicing, you put the level on the phone on the ground and you see where the bubble is. And okay, so I did the same thing. Every 5 meters, I put my level on the ground on my phone. I checked it out and the whole thing was flat. Whole thing was dead flat. So you knew that was going to be fast.
Wait a minute, you done that on the...
Yeah. Yeah, I was out there doing that. And you know that you can put everything into the first 10 meters and then just hang on for dear life. And that shook out really well. Mm. Same thing with monster dumbbell. I was the only one to touch the big monster dumbbell in the Bonya, which was partially just to have fun with it. And for context, this was 342 pounds, about as tall as Flex. And I'm thinking, it's the first time they made these like gargantuan sized dumbbells. You got to be prepared. You can't clean that like a normal dumbbell. So what on earth are you going to do with that? And then you get that sorted and cool. The reason I'm the first to touch anything in the Boneyard is a couple of reasons. One, a lot of guys want to see how other guys do it. I don't want to see how anyone does anything. I want to figure my way out first and then see if someone else has done it better, or else you fall into groupthink.
Oh, can you explain the Boneyard for the fans?
Yeah, so the day before heats and the day before finals, we have the opportunity to go see all the equipment we're using. At Worlds, we're not always exposed to exactly what we're going to be doing. For example, this year in the heats, they had weird groups of three logs tied together, and they had some ropes on them. We'd never seen anything like that before, so you get a bit of an opportunity to play around with that and see what can you do with it. But yeah, that's the reason I play around with things the most. Also, I think fitness-wise, I'd be well in the top end of strongmen, and it takes nothing out of me to go practice on the implements a little bit. I think, if anything, Worlds moves too slow. I'd love that to move a bit faster. Something like when we do the deadlift, it started really low, but once you got the flex out of the bar, it was actually a bit higher. And so then your technique has to change slightly to say it's a higher pull, not a deficit pull. But if you never pulled on that before, you would assume that it's a deficit, but it wasn't. So it's just so many details can improve your performance dramatically.
Yeah. There's a couple of things, obviously, you mentioned that I'm going to get into later on the episode. I'm talking about various different sports, including marathon runner, golfer, rugby player, etc.
Yeah.
But first, let's take it right back to your childhood. You were brought up in Barrie, Canada. Mm. This is where you currently and still reside, correct? As a childhood growing up, were you always a bigger, stronger kid than everybody else?
Yeah, I was bigger and stronger. I didn't really like that, though. Like, I was probably the chubbiest of all my friends, and I was probably the most overweight of all my friends. And a lot of my early fitness would have been wanting to be smaller. But yeah, when I played hockey, I was always the kid who could handle the puck, and people would try and hit me and they'd bounce off. And yeah, when football started, that was a whole different level. I was the kid that the mums didn't want playing with their kid.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I was a person that I wasn't proud of for a long time. So in football, when you tackle someone, if you pin both of their arms and you roll them so they land on their shoulder and you land on them, that'll break their collarbone. I think I broke 5 or 6 collarbones playing youth football just because that's just what I want to say. I'm against you. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's, I was always bigger and stronger. Probably didn't use it for the best reasons, but it wasn't something I took a lot of pride in. I was not the guy saying I want to be the strongest man in the world.
What age is this when you were playing football?
I started when I was 12, and I stopped first year university.
Got you. But in between that, I've done a little research, and you're a very skilled and accomplished golfer at one point in time. Even having an invite to even go to Florida and train under Tiger Woods' coach.
Yeah, which I did. I went out there for a week. That was when I was 13 before going into high school. So Sean Foley had a school where you'd golf most of the day, and then you'd get your schoolwork done with the idea of grooming you to go to Division I golf. And I went down there for a week. I played absolutely lights out. We had a nine holes the first day, and I think I was 5 under on 9 holes. And these other kids, and this is at 13, these other kids are like, who the hell is this guy? I wasn't that good on average, but yeah, it was just too much for me, too much to think about going down. I'm not even sure, because my mom, she sheltered me from a lot of it. And she's actually, the best part about my parents is that they never put pressure on me to do anything at all. And very much, I went down to Florida, and the idea in hindsight was to see if Mitchell wants to go to high school in Florida. That was never even communicated to me. It was just go down, have fun for a week, play with these guys. Then when I came back, my mom asked how it was. Would you want to go to something like that? And it was just, no, I don't think so. There was no, like, the gravity of it. It's just, okay, if you don't want to, then fine.
It was hot as hell.
My mom, actually, she has a really interesting perspective that I agree with on professional sports. She says that she would never want her kid to be a professional athlete, because if you look at everything about their lives outside of the sport, it's usually really difficult for them to have a home life, for them to have interpersonal relationships. It's almost like you're stuck as a 19-year-old forever. So I always had that perspective. She would make me go to all my sister's dance competitions growing up. I might have played the best football in province. I might have been the best athlete in my high school. My mom didn't care. She said, you have to go to dance competitions. When I pressed her on why, she said, because you're not going to be the person who just focuses on yourself forever.
Damn.
Yeah.
So what was it about dance?
My sister danced.
But what kind of dance was that?
Oh, it was everything.
The ballroom or?
No, she was best at tap. Oh. But she also did acro and hip hop and, mate, they were long days. It was tough. Some of the hardest days of my life.
Do you think they somewhat played a part in your mindset as time has gone on, having doing something that you excelled at, and then your mum making you do something that you truly would have shied away from had it not been for her?
Yeah, I didn't dance, to get that clear. I went and watched the competition.
Damn it, I had this vision in my mind of you tap dancing. I was going to acquire footage from your sister on you doing this.
But
sorry, guys, I did try.
I think that definitely tends to my mentality of, I don't think strongman's the most important thing in the world. I don't think bodybuilding is the most important thing in the world. I think anyone who says that it is has to think a little bit about their priorities and about, like I said before we started, what's it all for? And if you identify what it's all for, then you don't put so much pressure on winning. Then you don't get a big head about yourself when you win. You don't get devastated when you lose. And then it actually makes you perform better when you're not staking your entire life's purpose on winning a competition.
So going back to what you were saying about your mum and what she was having you do, support your sister and whatnot, what age is this?
That would have been my whole life. So starting from 5 all the way up to, would have been 14, 15 when she stopped dancing.
Got you. And at what point in time then did you get into the weight room? Where was this come about? Because was weights a big part of your football journey, or did this come?
In a way. In a way, yeah. The gym is actually the only thing that I've loved for a long time.
Tell us about that.
Other than Ashley.
yeah, sorry.
And my parents and my family. But it's the only thing I've been able to be consistent with. Everything when I grew up, there was football season. When football was coming to a close, I wanted to lose in the playoffs because I was excited to go play basketball. And then I never really had that thing about me.
Yeah.
I got to the gym when I was 16, and that was the high school gym. We had electives, like weight room electives. And I fell in love with it. I really haven't missed a day of training since I stepped into the gym when I was 16. But the goal was largely aesthetic. For me, it was largely to lose weight. And it was horribly unsuccessful. I had limited understanding of how that translated to performance. And so I was just trying to do as much as I could to look better. And chicken and rice and make my own lunches and the whole punishment of bodybuilding side of things. But I was always battling being heavier.
You can continue if you want. I don't know if there's more to that, but...
No, it started at 16. That was high school. 16 to 18, that was all high school weight room. I'd go to the gym every day. Then in university, we had football. Football for me didn't last very long, and a part of that was culture. Another part of that was they told you what your workouts were going to be, and I didn't like that. I love the freedom of figuring it out for myself and exploring different types of workouts and different movements. And so I quit football. After I quit football, I went from 240 to 305, and I remember a distinct moment. I stepped on the scale, and I saw 305. I looked at myself in the mirror, and I said, you will never be 300 pounds again.
Wow.
Shame. I hope future me forgives current me, given the circumstances. But
take it good.
Then after I was 305, I would go to the gym every day. And me and my best mate, we would go twice a day half the time. And I went from 305 to 195 in the span of about 18 months. I did a physique show. I came, I think, second last. I was terrible. I was shredded. So shredded. But I had no muscle on me at all. It just looked like I got starved for 18 months. But yeah, that was weights all the way up through bodybuilding. And all of that was strictly trying to get smaller, trying to lose weight, trying to look better, and fighting. My family is bigger.
Yeah. The bodybuilding days. Let's talk about that. What did you learn from that journey of doing your first show?
It's something I would never do again. Definitely learned that. But I think the most difficult thing in the world is restricting what you eat. And if you can do that and you can commit to that, you could really sacrifice anything. It's so primal for us to have something available to us, to have a temptation of junk food or sweets or whatever it may be, and to just say no for weeks on end, even when your body physiologically is screaming at you to give it a bit more, and you just withhold or withstand that for months and months. I think that's the pinnacle of discipline. And I still say I came 11th out of 12, but in terms of conquering something very difficult for me, that might have been harder for me than winning World's Strongest Man.
How long did you say the diet was for you on that?
18 months.
18 months. That's tough.
But I got some of the best advice ever, because obviously it's not a good idea to go from 305 to 195. Of course you're going to waste all your muscle away. I got to about 220, 225. And the person who was helping me, who's actually my high school weight coach, I said to him, let's take an off season. I'll build back a bit more muscle and then we'll lose weight and go compete. He basically said, you never know when you're going to be able to do this again. Get on stage, do it, do terribly, say how you feel. But I've carried that all the way through. That has got me to World's Strongest Man, because so many different times I would have said, I'm not strong enough to compete yet. And a lot of people have the idea, whether it's bodybuilding or strongman or powerlifting, but next year I'll be bigger and leaner, and next year I'll be stronger, next year I'll be able to do this. Yeah, but you've got nothing. If you don't actually put it on paper, you don't have anything to show for it. It's nothing over and over. And then the number of people in life who would say, I'm going to compete in a show next year, and then they get their wife pregnant, and then there's a kid, and they can't compete, and they never do it. You're like, life's just about doing things. And so, yeah, it was the most difficult. I'll never do it again, and it's the thing I'm probably most proud of.
Man, I love that advice. You know, high school teachers give you. That, honestly, is a mentality that I've used too. I tell a lot of people that. I get a lot of young guys that come into the gym, girls as well. Oh, I'm going to take all this year off and I'm going to step on stage next year. It's like, when you just commit yourself to a show and say, in June, this is it, no matter what, because there's never going to be a perfect time. There's always going to be X, Y, Z, fill in the gaps. So if you commit yourself to a show, not only will it show you purpose, and it also show you a dedication to an end result.
Yes.
That somewhat then you learn that have you have this commitment in your life, come rain or shine, you are doing that. A lot of people, as soon as they hit some sort of adversary or there's some sort of low time, whatever it would be, they're out. They cards in fold. And I think that's so sad, because there's so many great athletes that have lost out in the ability to progress in life, not necessarily be the best, but just to progress in life, and not just athletes, to people in general. So if that is a good piece of advice that is now coming from the world's strongest man.
Yeah. And it just gets back to, you can never lose context of what you're doing something for. And you and I can sit here as world champs who, it's changed both of our lives, and our lives are dramatically different and dramatically more comfortable. But when all is said and done, you'd be in dire straits if all it was is winning, and then you win, and then okay. And I would hazard the guess, you can disagree with me, but I think winning World's Strongest Man, it's given me more in terms of self-confidence, in terms of being able to commit to a process, in terms of understanding how great something is that you can achieve. That's given me more than any sponsor or title or anything. Just having that internal confidence. And you can have that internal confidence whether you win or lose, which is the most important thing. Because if your goal is to win Mr. Olympia, your goal is to win World's Strongest Man, anyone listening to this, bar one or two people, you're not going to do it. And you have to get comfortable with the fact that you're not going to do it. And I think I take an opposite approach to a lot of people, where a lot of champions say, to be the champion, that's got to be your number one priority. You can't think about anything else. You can't do anything else. And that has to be, I dreamed about it as a kid. I worked every day for 12 years. I did nothing other than focus on this one goal, and I got there. For every one person who says that, there are thousands of people who sacrificed everything for, in their eyes, nothing in return. So I think when it comes to being a champion, you have to put in context, what are you a champion of? Because I'm not a champion of strongmen. I am by definition, but I'm more of a champion of trying to be the best version of myself and trying to be the best person for my family and trying to make an impact for people and trying to give back to the community. And you can be a champion of those things, whether you are first place, 10th place, 20, whatever it is, you can still accomplish those goals and you can control those goals.
Yeah, whether you win in that title and what you've done over the last, when was the finals? How many months ago?
It was the end of April.
Jeez.
And yeah.
Since then, how much of a whirlwind has it been?
Crazy. Crazy. But it's a whirlwind because I've elected it to be that way.
Yes.
No one has come to me. No one has come to me and said, you have to do this, or you have to do this, or this is going to be best for you. I'll just get an email to come on the news. I'll get an email to come on the radio. I will reach out to my sponsor, say, we're on a tour in America right now, which brings us here with Rain. That was just, I called up Rain and said, I got a great idea. I'd love to link up with all your athletes. I'll go with my videographer. I'll go on the road for 20 days. We bought a house a month ago. I was in the house for a week, and then I'm off for 20 days. It sucks. I can't wait to go back home.
Yeah,
but also, make hay while the sun shines. So I called them up and said, hey, here's an idea. Here's how it would work. Here's the return. Here are the views. Here's what's going to happen. And then you finish that, people will turn around and go like, how did they give you that? Like, they didn't give me shit. I went and asked. I went and worked hard for it. And that's the thing. It just, all it is, you win World's Strongest Man, you win anything, you do anything. And now you just have these doors open in front of you. And I think 90% of people, even when you have those doors open in front of you, they'd sit in this chair and go, huh, those are some interesting doors.
Nice color.
Man, oh man. And that's just the attitude, right? When I won the Arnold, did you hear my quote after?
Please, I know what you said, but I want to hear it.
So and this was cut out actually of when they posted on YouTube, which I apologize for the statement, and I want to publicly redact the apology, because I said they said, what does this mean to you? And I said, it doesn't mean much, but a stepping stone to do the next thing. And I think that's all anything in life can be, because as soon as something's done, you're done. But you accomplish something, and that something is leverage. Whether you get a million followers, okay, you get a million followers for what? You got to do something with it. You win a show, okay, for what? Anything, you money or accolades or influence, you got to use it for something. You got to do something. And so I think that adopting the attitude of just, I always think of life as a mountain, and you're going up the mountain, and all you hit is different base camps. There's no peak. When you hit the peak, you die. And you go up to the base camp, and the clouds are there. And so that looks like the peak. But you get there, and the clouds have all of a sudden risen. You got the next peak. And like, it just perpetually, that has to go on forever. Whether you're an athlete, retired athlete, a retired person, anything, if you don't have that attitude, all of a sudden, your mind is going to limit what you can do. And my mind, taking me from a local show to World's Strongest Man in literally 12 months' time, that was the biggest battle. It wasn't my body. It was saying, okay, I guess you are one of the best in the world. I guess you can win. To the point where, I don't know if you ever had this feeling, but it happened to me before Arnold's and before Worlds. And I said it to the owner of my gym, who I'm quite close with. I said, it's funny, I don't want to be arrogant about it, but I just have this feeling that I've already won. I have a feeling that it's already done. And I said this on a YouTube video the day before the heats of Worlds. I said, I don't want to jinx anything, but it feels the same. It feels like I have already gone out there and won it. It feels like it's sorted for me. Like the anxiety's not there. The concern's not there. I just feel like it's already happened.
There's a lot of people who talk like, a lot of fighters will have that same feeling. There's a lot of violence that's just about to happen, but there's also a lot of calm before the storm. Yeah. Is that the kind of feeling you had?
Yeah, calm. Very calm, 100%. Very rarely will I get any high energy. Yeah. The more calm I am, the better I am.
You were laughing and joking, not close to the events, but you and I would meet periodically, and I don't know, obviously, what the athletes are like the day of an event compared to off in the gym. But you and I would pass frequently throughout that weekend, and we'd always have a little banter, a lot of laughs and stuff, on top of what the little skit that we had too. But yeah, but then that switch went off.
Yeah, I get accused. My coach actually tells me that I play very good mind games, but I don't try. I'm just having fun. I want to mess around. Like what we did on the beach, I want to do that with guys in warm-up, but I've got to calm it down.
They're in a different world. They're in a different world.
But yeah, I forget where we started this, but yeah, general attitude to compete. Yeah.
It's more...
pretty calm in general.
You said that you had some flack about...
What I said after the Arnold.
So you want to talk about that maybe, if that's something you want to, or you want to clarify anything?
I want to clarify that I'm not sorry. I want to clarify that I meant exactly what I said. But in long form, that's what I meant. Is that anything in life is a stepping stone to the next thing. Yeah. World's Strongest Man was a stepping stone to the next thing. So the only clarification is in people's interpretation, which is not my problem. But the interpretation can't be that it's a stepping stone because it's not important.
Yeah.
Like stepping stones, they're all incredibly important. But okay, getting your wife pregnant is probably the most important thing in your life. That's a stepping stone to having a baby, which is a stepping stone to raising a child, which is a stepping stone to having a family. It doesn't downplay the importance of anything. Yeah. And so I think that's really the only thing that was misinterpreted. But I think I want to continue to put that message out there.
Yeah, I understand it from the sporting context. But if I stood up on my table at the wedding and said, okay, this is a stepping stone to get you pregnant now, baby, I don't know if that would be well received as...
That's exactly what I would say. 100%. I'm so broody. My fiance, she's... Yeah.
Let's talk about that. I had the privilege of sitting right behind your family.
Oh, did you?
In the Stones, yeah.
Oh, amazing.
And I've got it. Obviously, I was filming and doing the media stuff, which I had the great pleasure of. But your fiance, right?
Yep.
Soon to be wife.
September 2nd.
Amazing. My gosh, she took off faster than anybody. I don't even think you put the final stone down. We all knew that if Mitch had... put that stone down regardless. It was all about all stones. He was going to win the World's Strongest Man. Mm-hmm. And literally, bro, you put that last stone down. She jet off and she sprawled at you. And there's like a iconic photo of her in your arms and you're just soaking it in.
Yeah.
Minute, second by second, nanosecond by nanosecond.
Yeah.
What was it for her who was... You guys have been together for a number of years, right?
Yeah.
From your Australian days all the way to...
Before that. Wow. When I met her, I hadn't long finished my last marathon.
Let's talk about these. Come on. We can't just start talking in about marathons and meeting girls and stuff. Let's just...
We'll wrap up the thought on that last stone. It's a Disney moment. So I was on the far side of the stones. And you guys... I didn't know you were standing there. I looked at her rather than you, believe it or not.
But disgusting.
She's marginally cuter. I got that
off camera. You speak a different talk, but it's okay. Just for context, let's keep going.
I got the stone in my lap and I went to reach around, and they put rings on the stones at Worlds, and that ring had stuck. So one of my hands was on it, and I knew there was no rush. I knew if I hit 5 stones that I would win. So I was repositioning my hands, and literally just a little bit over to the right was her, like bent over, like hands on her face. Is it going to happen? And I could literally see her as I was about to extend the stone. 100%. Wow. Hand on the Bible. And that's like amazing. And then, load that stone, and she... That moment of her jumping into my arms is the coolest thing. And that video is just life memory. We'll blow up that picture. We'll get it somewhere big in the house. And it's nothing if you can't celebrate it with people. Yeah, you win a championship, and I've won a handful of shows where I wasn't there with anyone, really. You end up back in the hotel room by yourself with the trophy and your sword. And, all right.
Yeah.
I hope that life improves. But life before and after, say, winning the Arnold was the same. Life before and after winning World's Strongest Man is the same, because I don't define life as what you have or what you've won. I think life is best put by Tony Robbins. Life is just a series of emotions you feel on a day-to-day basis. And winning World's Strongest Man changes your emotions for one day, maybe a week, it settles in. But eventually your emotions return to just the interactions you have with people. And it returns to the true quality of your life. And so that, to me, that's the real focus.
But then interactions that you now have are now defined by you being a champion.
They're defined by that, but they're not... No, they're set up by that, but they're not defined by that. You could be a champion who has poor interactions day to day. And so I'm having interactions with champions themselves, and that's really cool. And I think there's so much to learn from each one of the people that I interact with now. Yeah. But it's as much, okay, we're having this conversation. I'm sitting with you now. It's as much about, okay, I don't know. Are you going to be one of my best mates? Maybe. Are you going to not like me? Maybe. And you know, the number of mates you have and the number of good times you have, that's really what everything in life is predicated on.
Yeah. And talking about a couple of things you previously mentioned, with being mates, when you said something then, I don't know why I went there straight away. But I think you would be a very likable person to be around because you have, in my eyes, I couldn't put my finger on it up until I started doing my research on you. But it's definitely the rugby connection. I see you having this rugby element to you. You won't know what the hell I'm talking about. Yeah, because I played rugby since I was 6 until 19.
Yeah.
There's this like banter, shit talk that rugby guys have. And I see that in you. Again, you're the Canadian, so there's no correlation to the upbringing I've had. But there's like certain mannerisms that rugby guys have because you're always bantering, you're always talking shit. But yet, when the switch goes on, you're always there for one another on that rugby field. And I know that you had, I think you could have had, from what I've gathered, a very successful rugby career had you put your focus into that. Was that something, if you was had any aspirations to do future sports, or if you were to go back in time, would rugby be that team sport for you, or have you always been a singular one-man kind of athlete?
It speaks to, I haven't always been the same person. Mm. And we can dive into going to Australia in that bit if we want to go chronologically back to marathons afterwards, and that probably makes sense. But I was probably better at rugby than anything else. I think I was twice as good at rugby as I was at football. I think I could be one of the best rugby players in the world if I put my mind to the actual game itself. But physically, that sport fits me so well. I love it. But I would end up hating it for the same reasons I hated football, where putting your body on the line on a regular basis, to me, is just does not make sense. And the injuries in strongman, injuries in strength sports, I'm ready to accept.
Okay.
I'm ready to accept tearing pecs and biceps off and whatever. I'm not ready to accept brain injuries. I'm not ready to accept something that ruins your life forever. I'm not willing to accept the mental health detriments of hitting your head repeatedly. And it took away more from my life than added to it, because I would have a hard time focusing because I'd be seeing stars every day in practice. And
really?
I'd be getting hit in the ribs all the time. Huh. So you can't breathe properly for a day. And just chronically that over and over and over. I didn't love it. I also don't like... it'd probably be better now because I used to have big confidence issues. I didn't like the over-the-top banter. Yeah, if it was you and me and we're bantering with one another, always, I'd love that. That's a lot of fun. Yeah. But in the past, it's a group of 10 guys and you all take turns bantering at each other. I didn't have the confidence back then to be made fun of in front of 10 people.
Ah.
Now I could be in front of thousands of people and I'll make fun of myself. It's just, it's so much easier in life when you just realize I'm imperfect and I can be laughed at.
Yeah.
But I didn't have that back then. And so culture-wise, that was very difficult for me. So, yeah, I've become a team sport guy backwards.
I see.
Yeah, I don't think I tended towards individual sports more. I always played team sport. I think just once you are in uni, once you have a schedule, individual sports are just easier to participate in.
Yeah, do you say that you had confidence issues up until a certain point before you got into your steed and got the confidence to do in strongman and stuff?
Yeah, massive. I think... Even in some context now, I'd have confidence issues. But I think if you don't have confidence issues in any context, you're probably not self-aware enough. And so if we take it back to when I moved to Australia, I hadn't met Ash that long before. So we were together for maybe 3 months. And we went over to meet her family. There's a couple of stories around confidence issues. It's good. We went over to meet her family, and I told her, I'm like, because she doesn't like me saying this, but dating, I'm like a savant at dating. Like, one-on-one, I love it. I find it really fun, really challenging, like, really enjoyable. But as soon as more people get introduced, that's when it's big difficulty. So we go over to her parents, and I give her the warning. I'm like, look, I'm going to get nervous and you're going to be able to tell. And is what it is. Like, I want to fight that. We'll deal with it. So we go over and we're sitting at the counter and it's me and then her mom, then her dad. And I'm sitting there and I'm glad her parents couldn't see me. Literally looked like I was playing a basketball game. I could not have been sweatier. Just like so. And it was in response to like, where'd you grow up? Tell me about your family. And like that stuff I couldn't handle. It was just too much for me. And then a large part of why I went to Australia, because I, in high school, I was valedictorian, which is basically popularity contest voted by your peers. But I never went to a party. And so I always had a lot of acquaintances, but I never wanted close friends.
Huh.
University was the same. I went to the bar very few times. I always had the idea that in life you could get where you wanted to get without the help of other people, so long as you had enough knowledge, enough intelligence, you know, you build it and they will come. And I came to the realization I could not be more wrong. Mate, it's like totally opposite. The amount of people who know nothing who accomplish a lot. So I thought, what better way to exploit that than to go somewhere where no one, you have no connections at all. And so when I went to leave, I went to throw a going away party for myself. I had six friends who I could invite, and there was a long-term relationship that ended like maybe 6-7 months before I left. And that basically I lost all my friends in that. So I had six people who I could invite and one person came. And then, yeah, then that was a real gut check of, this is a reflection of people who want to be around you. I was not a nice person. Generally speaking, if there's 10 people in this room, it's exactly the attitude that I hated as well. If there was 10 people in this room and I said something that made you really upset and have to leave, and 9 people found it funny, I'd be like, on average, that was really good. On average, I nailed it. And like, you repeat that behavior over, and eventually everyone dislikes you for something you've said, something you've put out there, which that became a big struggle of mine. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go to Australia. And coincidentally, not so coincidentally, the University of Sydney was ranked number one in the world for the program that I wanted to go to. Mm. So that's a great option. University of Edinburgh was number two. So it was possible that I headed over to the UK.
Which is what?
Clinical exercise physiology.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I went over to Sydney. All I had was a plane ticket and an address. I knew no one, didn't have any connections, had no friends, nothing. Wow. And for me, it's like approaching it as an athlete, right? If this is something you suck at, you got to get really good at it. And so I went, and the biggest accomplishment of that whole time, graduating my master's is not in the top 5 things I'm most proud of from Australia. The thing I'm most proud of is in the peak of COVID, Ash and I had an engagement party, which was supposed to be our wedding, but people couldn't come over. And so we threw it anyway. And we had 20, 25 people cancel. And it was also a going away party because we were leaving. Oh. 20, 25 people canceled because they were worried about COVID and it was picking back up, like this fifth wave or whatever. But we had 75 people there and no family at all. A lot of amazing friends. Some of my best friends for life are from over there now. And that, from a personal development point of view, is the number one greatest accomplishment of my life. Yeah. So I have a clothing brand now, Lift Heavy, Be Kind.
Yeah.
And that is not a declaration of who I am. It's a hope for who I want to be. And like lifting heavy, it is what it is. And to me, that's the key to long-term health. But being kind is something that I have way more experience not being kind than being kind. And so to me, it's a reminder, constant reminder. Like, you do those two things, you'll probably live a pretty full, happy life. Same, I have tattoos on my thighs. Lift heavy, be kind.
That's what it says in your thighs, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what kind of things have you changed that you're consciously doing now? And unconsciously now that you're trying to newly walk in these new words of yours?
Before winning World Strongest Man, because it's different now, and it's different in an upsetting way, but before World Strongest Man, it's just things like making an effort to be closer to people, asking them if they'd like to do things, making an effort to get together, but then taking a genuine interest in people, taking a genuine interest in what they could teach you, being a bit sensitive to things that might be upsetting to them, just doing my best to show some sort of empathy and sympathy, and it's stuff that doesn't come naturally to me. Like, I'm not often the person that anyone would go to for a shoulder to cry on, because I would just go straight to, okay, how can we solve whatever you're dealing with? You're upset because you don't have money. Why do you have a shit job? Would be my nature.
A little too direct.
Yeah, that's right. But it's just, it's more so a shifting of priorities. And in Western world, one of the things we value the most is having positive interactions with people. And so understanding that's that's one of the things that people value the most. If you increase your number of positive interactions with someone, then you're gonna have more positive connections. You're gonna have more positive emotions, and that's gonna add to the quality of your life. And that's really all that can add to the quality of your life. And so it's almost to a point where I had a really nice upbringing, very privileged. There were sacrifices for it to happen that I just wasn't aware of, which is the ultimate in privilege. And we would go to Europe once a year. I could play whatever sport I wanted. And then I was smart enough to get into university, got to the number one program in the world. Somehow I become the greatest rookie strongman of all time. I'm one of the four people to win the Arnold Worlds. All I can think is I'm building up this incredibly huge debt to the world. And like, now for me, it's just, what can I give back to people? What can I give back to the people that I care about? How can I make other people's lives better? And it's almost this self-fulfilling prophecy where like, it's almost the give $1, get two back in an indirect way. And so my life just continues to get better as I give back and give back. But after World's Strongest Man, the biggest struggle is you're getting pulled in a million different directions. And who are the people who stay in and who are the people who leave? You got all these new people who now want to be in and for the wrong reasons. And then it's really difficult managing, like, who are the close people? And so I'd say outside of my family, I probably have three or four people who I'd consider really close to me. And everyone else is someone who I accept that at some stage will be out of my life because you're not the champion one day.
Or growing into somebody that's closer. Don't lose either.
100%. 100%. But the vast majority, if that three or four grows to seven or eight, that's amazing. That's incredible. That's all I could ever hope for. Yeah. And I don't have the capacity to manage more than seven or eight. You know what I mean? It's hard enough to have three or four. And high quality connections are, navigating that is one of the most difficult things after winning worlds.
Yeah, no, most definitely. But also, a little advice for you, having traveled around the world a little more years than you. There's a fucking fly in this room, bro, that is killing me, Tyus. And what is it? It's just fucking blowing me up around this. And did you see this going around you?
It was.
It came in from fucking Canada, fucking somewhere, mate. Yeah, there's one fly in here, and it's Vegas, mate. There it is.
It's on my flip flop.
Yeah, that can you imagine the DNA? Jurassic Park style, we can get out of this fucking fly, Tyus.
The coolest thing is that we are genetically 1% off of a fly.
Oh, jeez, we're not popping them fucking, we're not opening that kind of wound. But going back to what you were saying, the only advice I can give you is, mate, don't, the higher and the more you achieve, make sure that obviously the people who have been there from the get-go get much more love than ever.
Yeah.
And don't rule yourself out to meet the new people in your relationship, because there's a high percentage of the people that are coming in right now, they're only there because of X.
Yeah.
But there is going to be some people who are there for you. Yes, X might have connected you to being friends, but there's things that you can gather from another person. And I was that person for quite some time before, because I was like, what's the MO?
Yeah.
And I'm just waiting for it. And a lot of people, give them some time, they will hang their own noose and prove themselves. But I think the more and more circles of things that I've been doing right now in my life and various different speaking engagements, I'm meeting some incredible like-minded people who are not in the world of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
They're knowing me as the champion of that sport, but they're knowing me as the business guy, not the other way around.
Yeah.
So with you opening up all these new endeavors, traveling around the world and meeting all these people and fans that are coming up and standing in line for you and getting recognized, this is all part of the journey. Of course, you know damn well that at some point in time next year or whatever show you're training for, competition you're training for, there's a switch, and then there's that Mitchell Hooper that's training for that win.
Yeah.
Or in your terms, training to place somewhere. But there's that switch, and that's when you wean off the distractions. And them new people that you've met, they're either there to better you, or like you said, they fall off. They all prove themselves. But again, I want to touch on a few things before you wrap up the podcast. And one of them is I would be lit up in the comment section if we didn't talk about your marathon escapades.
Yeah.
Fill me in on that, my friend. I couldn't see you running a marathon. Not that I doubt you.
Yeah.
I have seen what you looked like when you were running the marathon. But I think that the fact that you've worn so many different hats over the years, you truly are an athlete. You've played so many different sports. You've worn so many different footwear and in different events and competitions and sports and whatnot. I think it proves to me why you are the world's strongest man. Because you've gone through so many different things and picked up the attributes in so many different sports and put them all together to create the Mitchell Hooper we see today, plus your upbringing, plus everything else that we all know you as. But marathon running, would be something I never would have put you or ticked the box on. So tell us about that.
I finished my bodybuilding show. And the best thing that came from that, aside from the personal feelings of satisfaction and growth, was that I just wanted to eat everything. Absolutely everything I could get my hands on.
Yeah.
And I thought, if I'm going to eat everything I'm going to get my hands on and I don't want to become obese, I have to find a way to work the food off. Couple that with, I was at the time shifting an intention from thinking I wanted to work in high performance forever to I wanted to work in health and longevity. And as someone who's played team sport all the time, you can't really relate to someone who has never exercised before. So I thought, I need to create a way in which I can relate to them, and I can relate to someone who wants to change their body composition because I just did a bodybuilding show. So I'm going to have to relate to someone who has to aerobically train. My mom ran marathons. She's ran 5 or 6.
Dang.
So I was exposed to that growing up. And then I thought, there's that fly.
I know, bro. Welcome back. Can we get this fly? Can we walk around? I don't know. Just walk around a fucking stand. Mr. Miyagi, this thing. Yeah, I know. It's like getting in his grill.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to train to run. And if I'm going to run, I'm going to run the longest common distance possible. And so the first day I went out for a run, I ran 10 kilometers. And so my base was pretty good.
First day? Uh-huh. How much training had you done at this point in time? Any at all?
For
any
running?
Physical fitness?
No. Nothing. For running. I was in bodybuilding shape. Like, I was quite light. But that wasn't a problem for me to go run 10K.
Huh.
And over time, I think I gave myself 12 months. 12 months to run my first marathon. And that actually ended up being my best performance. At 3 hours, 24 minutes, I went up and ran the Ottawa Marathon with my mom. I think that was 2016. I backed up a couple of months later and did the Toronto Marathon. Then the next year, I did the Toronto Marathon again. And all of this was in hopes for qualifying for the Boston Marathon, which finishing time had to be 3:05. And I think the last marathon I ran, I was in shape to do it. But I was supposed to run my first half in 1:27. And I ran my first half. No, sorry, 1:32.5. And I ran my first half in about 1:19, which to the layperson sounds incredible. You're ahead of the pace, but it's a disaster. When you get it wrong, it's a disaster. Yeah. And then my knees got sore, and that was the end of it for me. But during that time, that's what I was training. I would weight train twice a day. I would run 5 days a week. And at university, you have more time to train than you'll ever have in your whole life. Like anyone listening to this who's in university going, oh, I don't have time to do anything else, wait till you start working. It gets 100 times worse. And it's just the principle of consistent effort, which I think when people look at me as an athlete, you can argue genetics for winning World's Strongest Man. Of course, maybe 0.001% of the population can ever have the aspiration to do that. But if you're going to argue my genetics are amazing to win World's Strongest Man, you cannot argue that my genetics are amazing to run a marathon. And you could be pretty competent at both with consistent effort. The same principles apply, I've found. Same principles apply if you want to be a strongman, you want to be a bodybuilder, you want to be a marathoner, you want to be a businessman. It's just, if you put your nose to the grindstone and you do things intelligently and you continue to learn from your mistakes and you keep trying, eventually you're going to be pretty damn good at whatever you end up doing.
Consistency.
Yeah.
Daily reps.
Yeah.
And whatever you want to do.
That's right.
So we've talked about the marathon and I think in terms of timelines and running everything up into the strongman, you powerlifted, just keeping the timeline, you got into powerlifting, but powerlifting, well, best you explain.
Yeah, so I moved to Australia, and then during that time, I had about a year and a half where I wasn't competing in anything, which was really unusual for me, and I wanted to find something, but I didn't really know. I had a lot of stimulus from being in Australia and from meeting new people and new experiences, and I moved from a suburb called Chippendale to a suburb called Parramatta. When I was in Parramatta, I tried to find a gym. You're swinging about Chippendale.
I'm a little fucking kid. I'm just waiting for it. Sorry, bro. You can't be mentioning things like that.
No, it's good.
you only hit the stage every other Tuesday, but that's another subject for another time.
Then in Parramatta, I was looking for a new gym because I couldn't work out at the university gym. It was too far away. And there was a gym called Adonis Athletics, which really all I was looking for was an environment. And it was an industrial park. It was a dingy gym with loud music is all like I really wanted. Places. And they did powerlifting there, so I ended up powerlifting. I was in it for 6 months, 8 months, something like that. Won the national championship. And just before the national championship, I did my first strongman show. Powerlifting with just squat, bench, and deadlift wasn't really stimulating enough. It wasn't exciting for me. And that took me over into strongman, which some of the other guys at that gym did. And that's that. I did a couple of local shows, did two state shows, and then I got a really lucky invite to World's Strongest Man. I played a lot of politics to get in. And yeah, it's actually amazing how life goes. We were getting ready to come back from Australia, and I had 475 kilo deadlift. I had two state titles. I had two local show wins. And that's really all I had to my strongman name. And my thought was, we're going to move back. I'm opening my clinic. I'm going to shut down all the strongman stuff. I'm going to give triathlons a crack. Then I was trying to get into World's Strongest Man to see if I could.
Big difference, by the way.
Yeah.
Triathlons, yeah. World's Strongest Man.
I'll go to them still, though. I'll still go to them. I'll finish an Ironman one day.
I have no doubt, my friend.
And I got invited to World's Strongest Man and thought, okay, we're going to train for this and see how it all goes. Eighth at World's Strongest Man, and now we're 9 podiums straight, and I've won the last 5 or 6 shows, and it's just incredible how life takes you.
That eighth in the World's Strongest Man, that was the first year you had you came in on a reserve, correct?
Yeah, yes. I wasn't actually in, yeah.
You only trained, I know you trained consistently up to that point, but you got that call 3 weeks notice, 4 weeks notice?
Yeah, I was told I was a reserve maybe 6 or 7 weeks out. And then, yeah, it was maybe
it was confirmed.
3 weeks, 4 weeks out that it was confirmed.
What was the mindset change for you during that point? Nerves, excited, relief?
The most difficult part of my entire strongman experience, harder than going into World's Strongest Man final event winning, harder than anything, was just the ambiguity of, are you in, are you out? Is this going to be a thing? Is it not? Because I think the worst thing that could have happened to me is if I got stuck in strongman purgatory, and it's enough that you're sacrificing large parts of your life, not enough that you're making any sort of financial return, you don't have really sponsors, and you're just trying to like scrape through. That would be the hardest thing, and that's when you go, do I keep pushing, do I stop, what are we doing here? And then the bit with Ashley, when she jumped into my arms at the end of Worlds, the bit that means so much about that is not the fact that it was straight after I won World's Strongest Man. It's that when you're someone like me, someone like you, we will never consult our significant others as much as we should about, this is what life is going to be like. And it takes a special person to just go, okay, you're out of the country this many weeks a year, and every vacation's predicated on where we're going to go, and certain times of year we can't do anything. And they're really not, they don't sign up for the sacrifice they have to make. You sign them up for it. And to have that actually pay off is that, for me, it was relief. It wasn't being ecstatic about winning, just this is all worth it. And like, now she sees it, now everyone sees it, and now it's just, that was the most special part. But crazy to reflect on. When you actually see the long form, you were there. When everyone else sees the long form, when you see me after I win, it's what the fuck is
what
going
just
on?
Happened?
I know, because you don't let yourself go there until it's done.
Yeah.
You can't. And then when it's done, it's so strange.
What happened when it's done?
Pardon me?
Tell me what happened when it was done. When it was done and it was just you and your girl, no cameras, no fans.
That's a different podcast, isn't it?
I'm trying to get some tears out of you, bro. Nah, take us back.
I won.
That first conversation that happened, when you guys just had your time together.
Yeah, I'll have to think about when that actually was. Man, because we finished up, a whole bunch of news, whatnot. I went to a restaurant just beside the venue, went back up to the hotel room. It's really just collectively, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What is going on? Like, just, it's hard to explain to people how short a period of time it was between considering that winning's a possibility and actually winning. Mm. Even after winning the Arnold, you're like, okay, but everyone comes in better shape to Worlds. Mm-hmm. The events there aren't near as good. I'm in with a shot, sure. Maybe 25%. There's probably 6 guys who could win. I never thought about winning until I was driving down. And I was driving down with my business manager. And I said, it would be a really weird thing to say that you're the world's strongest man. It actually never even dawned on me before that, but what the emotion would be like. And it's not tears. It's not sad like you would expect, because it's just like, how is the world giving this to us? How on earth can we, I think we both actually, like, we bought this new house. It's a dream home. We'll never have to move again unless we want to relocate, and we've got space for family. And as soon as we get married, we're ready for kids. It's like, how have we deserved this? How have we deserved any of it? I haven't sacrificed as much as a lot of other guys. I haven't given up areas of my life that other guys have given up. I have my health. I have business. I have a business outside of Strongman. I've got a good relationship with my family. I still spend time with them every week. You're like, man, something bad is coming my way. It has to. So that's why for me, I want to give back as much as possible. And I think it comes off a bit unlikable in a way when I'm pretty upfront about it. I haven't sacrificed as much as other guys, and I'm just genetically really lucky. I see that almost as a slight on myself more than anything. And I only say it in the context of it's given so much to me disproportionately. I would actually say in the history of Strongman, I've gotten more from it than anyone in the history of the sport for the amount of time I've been in it. And I only say that I'm lucky that way in so that it's a responsibility to give back. It's like the first small thing is with my apparel, the Lift Heavy Be Kind apparel, 20% is donated back to independently owned strength gyms to try to keep growing the community. And for a world that's given so much to me, I just want to be able to give back as much as possible. For example, I haven't put this out yet, but Rain accidentally sent me like an extra big Rain fridge. I've got one. It's so cool. People on social media were loving it. And then another one came. What is going on? So I'm going to raffle that off, send it to someone and use the proceeds again to donate back to a gym and try to grow the sport as much as I can. Do you know, because when it comes to strongmen, I think, don't want to get too off topic, sorry, but I think it's a great way for people who are out of shape to be able to get into shape. You don't take someone out of shape and say, go for a run. You take someone out of shape and go, how could this person be successful somewhat early? And strength training, that they're strong. They're strong. But to get back to the original point, I'm still having a hard time believing that I'm world's strongest man. Do you know, I'll read stuff and it'll be like the greatest strongman of all time, the guys who have won the Arnold and Worlds in the same year. It's me, Brian Shaw, Zdrunas, and Thor.
Legends.
And me. And the guys who have won it in the same year, it's Thor, Zdrunas, Brian, and me.
And what could you say about all three of them guys?
I'd say they're a hell of a lot better than I am. I look at that list and I'm like, on paper, I'm on the list, but my head cannot wrap around it, which I think, if you ask me going into World's Strongest Man, I love doing on average. I always do. If the competition was ran 1,000 times over, where would you finish? And I placed myself at 2.3. And I thought,
that's important average. In this, right?
Oh, 100%. And I'll do all the math. Okay. And physically, I can get there. This event, I can do this. This is what other guys can do. Emotionally is a whole different story. Emotionally getting there is so challenging. Yeah. Like digesting what on earth. My favorite thing to contemplate now, so you take anyone, absolutely anyone on the street, any of your friends, anything. You go, what are you best at compared to other people? And where would you rank yourself in the world? And most people would be, you're probably, if you're 1 millionth in the world at something, you're pretty incredible. Mm. You're the millionth best financial advisor. You got a yacht, you're loaded, you're sweet, you're good. Maybe not millionth, but maybe 100,000th or whatever. You go, I am actually number one. Just winning is not that important to me, just to reiterate, but just the knowledge that like you're at the pinnacle of the world in anything is ridiculous.
I used to have this moment when I'd be on a plane and I'm looking down and I can see land underneath me, and it's just nothingness. So you just see there's cities, but there's just, you think to yourself, if I was the best in that city down below, that's crazy. And then you start thinking, man, I've flown for 10 hours, and all the cities, all the countries, everything that I've flown over, I'm the number one.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that's not being cocky, that's just a realization of, I've had multiple realizations, and that is one of them, holy shit, wow. But then you just go back to business. I don't know about you, but there's nothing that really hits me in the face where it's my ego changes or anything like that. But I want to say with your journey, and you mentioned, obviously, you said you've compared to other strongmen, what was the sentence you said? Not that you've done it a different way to the other guys.
I've had to sacrifice less.
Sacrifice. That's the word. I don't think so. Everybody's got their own journey. Everybody's sacrificed whatever it is. To be best in the world, they're sacrificed, no question. I think what I can see you doing is maybe comparing the story of journey. There's a lot of strongmen that have gone in, like earlier topics, and said, I want to be the best strongman in the world. And they've dedicated themselves to this life, torn biceps, healed back from them, got back up there. That is a story that we're all familiar with because they're in my world, they're in other worlds, and then there you are, a rookie in this world that have just hit the blocks and come out and is incredible. I think that is a scary storyline to tell in any sport, but I also think it's also so fascinating that you can have athletes like yourself that are out there that, if exposed to different sports, could transition easily. Again, you've got a pedigree of so many different sports you've been very good at. You've not been average, you've been very good at, and for whatever reason, you've gone on to the next. But strongman is the one that kept your attention, that makes you hungry. And again, bodybuilding was that one for me. It was the always the push and getting to a point where you look at yourself in bodybuilding. I'm the best, but there's still more improvements to go on. And then you do it again and again. And with strongman, it's all strength oriented, yes, but still there's that the new technique to be learned. There's new things to be done. There's always an evolution, and you're a student of the game. And I've, from the research I've done of you, you have been a student of the game in everything you've done, all the way from school. You were very skilled in school as well. Do you look at strongman, all the events and everything you do, and have a like a mathematical equation to everything, or a X plus X equals this? Does that happen with you with strongman? There has to be a mathematical equation and an end result for you to go for it?
Yeah, everything. To an irritating extent. I think people talk about how I talk about things, and oftentimes they're complimentary towards it. And I think in our world, we're disproportionately complimentary to people who analyze and have long-term plans and have X, Y, and Z, and A plus B takes me here. And if I do this, I could get this. And if I do this, I could get this. And if I meet this person, this happens. And what I would give to shut it off.
Really?
But I can't. During your workday, what an asset. It's amazing. Yeah. When you're lying in bed, no. When someone's having a conversation with you and your head is somewhere else, your head's doing, I don't know if math's the right word, but your head is analyzing things.
Yeah,
you're doing an analysis on where you're going to be in 10 years' time while someone's trying to tell you about their dog or something. And this is where I was talking before, where I think that's one of the most unlikable things about me, is that it's hard for me to have conversation that's not about big things, that's not hugely stimulating. I can't, even with Ashley, I have a difficult time. If she wants to tell me details about her day, I've got to chill myself out to try to listen, to try to take it all in. And it's also difficult when people praise you for being that way, because it's not a great thing in day-to-day interactions. And if you take me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have been that tenfold. And then it's really hard, because if you want to, we can be surface level, have amazing, meaningful conversations about something. But if I want to be your best mate, you have to be able to tell me about just a stupid fight with your missus that pissed you off. I wouldn't listen before. So that's like really challenging thing. I think the one thing context wise about not sacrificing things as much as other guys have, the only thing that I feel like I've had to sacrifice in this whole journey that I don't speak about much is mental health. And that is really it takes a massive toll. And personally, I could live in a one bedroom apartment that's $500 a month and just scrap it out and whatever. As soon as you introduce more and you introduce ambition, you introduce family, and you're making these sacrifices that people haven't signed up for, the pressure to be able to actually perform and execute is immense. It's so challenging, because if it doesn't pay off, then you're just a jerk. You sacrifice a lot of your life and other people's lives for, in terms of long-term gain, nothing. And so going into the Arnold, it was probably one of the most difficult times of my life. And I'd speak to my coach a couple of times a week. And part of the bit, like, if you watch his channel, his Big Laws Official, if you watch him going up to me after, you can see that I'm fighting back tears, and it's not tears of joy. It's tears of, there were times I didn't think I was going to make it here. There are times I literally didn't think that was going to happen. And it's something that I've struggled on and off with for a long time. And it shapes my worldview a lot. And the reason I think the way I do, and the reason I think about strongman, what's it all for? What am I doing it for? The people who contemplate what you're doing it all for the most are the people who have to. And if you never have to, it's a blessing and a curse. If you never have to, then you're happy just to go about it and do your best. And if you win, great. If you don't, then that's fine. But I know that even winning wouldn't solve my problems.
Yeah.
And so winning has to be part of a greater plan to continue to contribute. And you stack the difficulty in mental health. And it, people are probably surprised, and I held off until an hour into the podcast because I don't want people who are listening the first 10 minutes to hear, but you'd be surprised that the year that I've just had on paper by any metric is out of this world.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's the best year of your life, which in a lot of ways it is. When I'm 27, this is actually a freaky thing. When I was 17, I could have told you 27 would be the best year of my life. And hopefully it's not. Hopefully we keep going up. And then when I'm 27, I win the Arnolds, I win Worlds, we're getting married this year, we'll probably get pregnant this year, we bought our dream house this year. How does it get better? What else are you going to do? But you overlaid the difficulty and the struggle mental health-wise, which I think it's always been there on and off. Then you're getting assessed by people on your character who don't know you. And even if people listen to this podcast for an hour, and okay, you can think one thing or another, but you've only heard someone speak for an hour. And that's the people who give you a lot of time in today's age.
Some kiss 15-second reel, and they judge you off a reel.
And so you'll get raked over the coals. After I won the Arnold, I put out something that was, and things were a little bit better straight up to the Arnold. But after I won the Arnold, I put out something and said, it was terrible editing, but it was, do you want to make $500,000 in your first 12 months in the fitness industry? And I go, it's obviously not that easy. That bit was cut out. I put that on Fabian. But anyway, I didn't listen to it. And we just put it out, whatever.
Yeah.
And the reason I said that is because that's what I did. And that's the context. But then people go, you're trying to cheat people. You're just in this for the money. But this and this and this. And character assassination left and center from people who just heard one stupid thing that you said.
They're picking up on a narrative and they run with it, man. You can't convince them. That's the problem with that.
No, if you have a completely healthy mind, it's easy not to run with it. But if you're not, it's very difficult. And you balance and you go, the only way that you make the most from Mr. Olympia, World's Strongest Man, any of our fringe sports, is you get big on social media. You have no choice but to accept that. And the only way that you can accept that, if you're not in the best headspace, the only way is if you know exactly where you're going and exactly what it's for. Then you're going to take shit and it's going to be whatever, and there's going to be comments, and there's going to be people loving you, there's going to be people hating you. And do you know what? Actually, now that I think about it, the most difficult part of it all is when you start to come up in something, people who have no idea who you are, they'll both be, a small fraction of people will be insulting for no reason. I find that easier to take than the people who are super complimentary for no reason. Because the people who are super complimentary for no reason, you're just getting all of these empty compliments that now start to mean more and more of nothing. And I talk about a negative correlation between how well someone knows you and how much they like you. Where on average, people who don't know me and who have never met me before, they think I'm the best thing that's ever happened. It's so inspirational. It's amazing. You've changed my life. All the way down to the people who know you best, who are just like, you're just a normal dude and you got flaws and some good, some bad. And then it's like, you're trying to wrap your head around why... People who know me really well don't like me as much as people who don't know me at all. Is there something about getting to know me well that intrinsically just is not that valuable? And then that starts to play in your head. And I'm a victim of my own success because a lot of guys they digest this at 10,000 followers, 15,000, 20,000. And I've gone from 10,000 to 100,000 in 8 months.
It was fast.
And then you're like the focus of a lot of conversation and a lot of discussion and a lot of analysis. And I didn't have time to digest that properly. But that would be the number one sacrifice, if you'd like to call it that, is mental health-wise, I probably haven't had the year that a lot of people would expect.
It doesn't supersede anything, though, right? Anything that has happened to you with this bloody fly, I'm sorry. The mental health element of things, has it superseded any of your victories?
Define supersede in this context.
So you win in the World's Strongest Man. You win in the Arnold Classic, right? And then you get in the fame that comes from that, right? You're going to get the comment section that is, like you said, all about, you know, yourself. And then you're going to get the comments then that are not. And then going into the World's Strongest Man, you pick up this new form fame, which rightly so is a title that comes with earning the title. And then you're going to get guys and girls who are just jumping on that comment section just to jump on the comment section. They wait for slippage. They wait for whatever else. So was any of the mental health issues that you had going into the World's Strongest Man more so enhanced after the wins that had a detrimental effect on your day-to-day?
I don't let anything have a detrimental effect on my day-to-day.
Okay.
Do you know if it's just – and when it comes to mental health stuff – there's been times where, you know, I don't know if I'll be around tomorrow. never mind getting to World's Strongest Man or the Arnold or whatever. But I just never see not getting out and going about your day. I never see that as worse than sitting in bed and doing nothing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people would be self-perpetuating a little bit where, I don't know, you're a bit down, whatever it may be. But I try my best to get myself out of it pretty quick.
Do you have any moments that you go into, you have issues like this? Because I think the reason why I'm asking you this, you're the best, the world's strongest man. I've had people that sat in the exact same chair as you and talked about mental health, and everybody goes through their different versions of it. Some of these have like a PTSD version of something that resurges once a year, twice a year, over events. Is there anything now that you can, being in the shoes that you have, scaling through the World's Strongest Man competitions to now becoming the World's Strongest Man, that you can tell the fans that are listening to your story, that can emulate, can relate, that you've done to help your mental health?
Yeah, to help, I think it's more important to give context of, do you know what it's like? And since World's Strongest Man, it's been really quite positive and I've been in a great place, but I think it's not because I won World's Strongest Man, it's just these things come in ebbs and flows. But in the lead up to World's Strongest Man, in the lead up to winning these shows, in the lead up to who I am today, there's times that you're in bed and the hardest bit of all of this is that I know that my family listens to this and this is stuff that I've never spoken about before, but I've sat by myself in the bathroom looking up train schedules of like, when could I go to the train tracks? Of anything you could think of where it's detrimental, anything.
What do you mean by train tracks?
Like looking up a train schedule of when could I go lie on the tracks for...
Really?
Yeah, and this is all part of coming up to who I am today. This isn't when you were at a downtime and accomplishing nothing. This is, say, a year ago, 2 years ago. I'm not confident that won't come back, and you got to have the people around you to support you. And it's there's been a lot of delicate moments where maybe I'd be here, maybe I wouldn't. But that's even in the context of accomplishing things. And so I think anyone out there having difficulty, the number one difficult question you have to ask yourself is that you're having a mental health issue. Should you be having a mental health issue? You know, if you're in your mom's basement, you don't have a job and you have no prospect of improving, maybe you're just telling yourself that you need to go do something. You need to accomplish something. But I think it's an equally appropriate assessment to say, if you are accomplishing a lot, then what do you need to be able to feel better? And for me, 100% of the time, it's that I have to make my own assessments that, like, okay, it's not happening. There's one time in particular. God, I wish my mom wouldn't hear this. Sorry, Mom. One time in particular when I was before I went to Australia, I was in my car and I had a rope. I drove into the woods and I was sitting there. And sitting there thinking, okay, am I going to do this? Am I not? Learn about tying it correctly and, you know, how to do it all and looking at the trees and which one should I choose? And eventually I said, you know what? I had an intramural basketball game and I thought, if I'm not there, they're going to start to raise concerns. It's going to cause a big thing. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to go to the basketball game. And like that decision was the most powerful thing for me. And I don't think it's great advice for people to like get yourself to that stage and then decide, but you'll never be so sure that it's not what you want to do as the moment that you've decided you don't want to do it. It's almost the classic thing. Every person who survived off of the Golden Gate Bridge has said, as soon as my feet left the bridge, I didn't want to do it. And I knew I didn't want to do it. And so that's how they saved themselves, because they broke the surface tension throwing, so they figured something out. And I think I'm putting something out about this shortly because it's Men's Mental Health Month, which probably primes me to talk about it. But the stigma around mental health, I don't think it's what people think it is. I don't think it's that you tell me you've been depressed at some stage and I think, oh, okay, you're weak, you're a loser. I think those days are gone. I think the stigma is that I'm not having difficulty telling you because I'm talking to you. Off mic, I could talk to you about this all day, it's fine. It's about the people who care about you feel as though they have a role in putting you in that place, and they have a responsibility to get you out of it. And I think that's the stigma that we have to stop. And anyone listening to this, anyone who cares about me listening to this, understanding that there's nothing that anyone can do sometimes to take you out of a spot or put you in a spot. It just is what it is. And yeah, it's quite a personal journey in terms of how to improve. But I think more than 50% of people who are having difficulty because their life situation is what's giving them difficulty, and putting that energy towards improving your life situation would probably do you some good.
Well, when did this event take place? When you went to hang yourself? How many years ago was this?
6 years ago.
And has there been any other time since then that this has crossed your mind?
Recently? Yeah. It's not, like, for me, it's not an infrequent thing. Maybe once a quarter. Yeah. And that's where, like, your own worst enemy and your best friend, when it's, like, your brain, you're, like, if we have the same sort of, like, obsessive thing, and, like, it could take you great places amazingly fast, and it can take you terrible places amazingly fast. And I don't think you're going to run across someone who's a champion of anything who's, there's not something out of whack here. I almost akin it to, like, autism. And people who are autistic, their social capacity is really low because too much has been dedicated to playing the piano or being amazingly artistic. And any champion, I think there's something a bit out of whack, and we have to work on that really hard. And yeah, I think I've come to terms that it's something that's going to come, it's going to go, and it has to be a personal realization. But it's also, the more fulfilled I am, the less likely it is to happen. And fulfillment is not happiness. Like, this trip has not made me particularly happy. It's given me a lot of joy speaking to people, but being in an airport every other day and wait times and delays and trying to schedule everything, it's massively stressful. But
life for the champ.
But it's hugely fulfilling because you know how many people you're reaching. You know how much you're helping. And so happiness is low and fulfillment is high. And that's where I always want to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where one is happy and one is joy. I always say, if I wanted to be happy, I would lie in bed, I'd get food brought to me, and I'd masturbate all day.
What a dream.
I'd probably have a joint and, yeah, but that'll make you happy and depressed. Where getting up early, working hard, accomplishing things, building something will not make you happy, but it will bring you joy. It will bring you fulfillment. And that's something that's going to last a lot longer. And so, potentially, something like winning World's Strongest Man gives me the capacity to now have a lot more joy because I have a lot more leverage to speak to people, a lot more leverage to build things. And maybe that's going to be the best thing that comes from it. But I'd be naive to say that you won't go back into those places sometimes and you're in and out, and it is what it is at a certain stage. I think if you worry too much about it never happening and you're someone who's prone to it happening, then you feel like you're letting yourself down when it happens.
It takes a lot of courage to come out and open and honest and speak as openly as you just have done, considering that you are the best in the world. There's like armor when we're with guys that we don't want to show our weak side, especially when they're the champion, right? You're supposed to be squeaky clean and just say whatever every once a year. But this is a topic that is true to form. This is a topic that affects a lot of men, and mental health over the last decade now has become more prevalent. And speaking, hearing top athletes in so many genres talking about their mental health issues, talking about times where, just like yourself, they've been very low, contemplated stuff. Thankfully, you're here, you've battled a lot of your whatever thoughts that were going through your mind at that point in time, whatever event Trump triggered it. But I think you have such an important role right now, mate. Whether you know that or not, I think you are aware, but you have such an important role right now for not just the sport of strongman, but for men, upcoming young men that are in the gym that are going through a wide variety of different issues, from self-esteem issues to confidence issues. And again, there's not many guys who have achieved greatness or being the best in their individual sport who are talking as openly as you have just have. So from me to you, my friend, that truly means a lot that you're speaking openly. And from what you just said, I gather that you're now going to be putting some more stock into the mental health element in and around your brand. Is that correct?
Right now it's going back to gyms because that's what's helped me the most. And I always talk about it in the context of objective self-improvement. In my lowest of low, I've still been able to look at myself in the mirror and say, at least you're fitter than you were 6 months ago. At least you're stronger than you were 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And if you can create ways in which you cannot argue with yourself, I don't know if you've struggled with this stuff or not, but it's incredible what you can convince yourself of that's subjective. And you can convince yourself that your family doesn't like you and your partner doesn't like you and things would be better without you and whatever. But I'm I think you could give me any argument at all. You could say, give me an argument that this table's not round, and I'll go at it with you for an hour. And so I just have that bit in me where I can do that, and I'll do that with myself. Mm. And it'll be stuff that might not make sense, but I can make it make sense pretty quickly. But there's nothing about objective self-improvement that you can make sense if you've got the numbers, if you've got something. So if that's you lifted a heavier weight, if that's you've ran further or faster, if that's your body fat, you've analyzed it and you've gotten leaner or you've gotten more muscular, it's certainly not something that you should have as a staple of your self-worth, but it's certainly something that can bolster your self-worth when you feel like you don't have something else to lean on. And so for me, if I had $5 billion to give, I'd be giving it to gyms. I wouldn't be giving it to mental health charities. I wouldn't be giving it to psychologists. I'd be giving it to gyms because I think this is where people can really find themselves. I think if you, COVID was the best example. Like the number one mental health issue for people during COVID is that they couldn't be active. They couldn't get to the gym. They couldn't be in their community. So if we can just have the opposite impact and think, I don't talk about this stuff much. I've never talked about that stuff with anyone outside of really Ashley, but If I can say I want to grow the strength community because that's going to have positive physical and mental health outcomes, I can say that as World's Strongest Man and hope that people watching this who are probably already watching it because they know me as well, hope that they're more inspired to go to the gym or something. And Butterfly flaps its wings in Australia and there's a new child born here. So I think that's bullshit. I think, okay, what could we actually do? What difference could we actually make? And so that's what I'm doing my best to try to do, to try to give back. And I think if you think of the most macho men in the world, it's the best bodybuilder and it's the world's strongest man. And if I can be a part of that, coming out and saying, look, you can be accomplishing great things, you can have a great life, you can have nothing going wrong and you can have difficulty, then that's important. For example, like even all the way back, I was 10 years old. I vividly remember this. I'd be 10 years old. We'd be going on a trip in Europe, bike trip in different city every day. We'd be staying in castles and it'd be incredible. I'd only be able to get through about 3 or 4 days of that before I'd get depressed thinking like, what have I done to deserve any of this?
The good times.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Because I had the context where my parents split when I was very young and my mom, she was very well off and she made a lot of sacrifices. She's very particular how I talk about this. I never knew the sacrifices that she went through and I had everything I could want. Okay, so we had a nice house. We went on nice vacations. My dad, hard worker, very hard worker, not the best with money. And so I would go on a weekend with him and we'd be in his apartment and I vividly remember, could we go to the driving range? And bucket of balls was $10 and he didn't have $10 in his bank account. And as a kid, you don't understand that. But what I understood is like, when I'm with dad, I can't do anything because of money. And then he'll go drop me off at a $500,000, $700,000, million house. I'm like, why am I living so comfortable? I've done nothing. Like, I've just been born. That's it. And so a lot of my athletic endeavors have almost been like fighting that, where strength sports, you do not need to be rich. Running, you do not need to be rich. So I've tended towards things that don't cost a lot of money because I want to prove myself against people who I don't have an advantage over.
Were the kids in your school knew that they were aware of your bigger house? Is that the thing where you were aware in the circles?
No.
Of school? Okay.
No, because even amongst my friends, a lot of them had similar houses and it was... But I always had the context of my dad. And I think that is, for me, that's really shaped me. And it's that debt. I think that's the bit that I have to get over and for me to get better long term, is that I feel the amount that the world has given to me is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And you can make a counter argument and say, well, you've made certain moves and you've done certain things. Sure, but there's an element of just how lucky are you? And whether that's a fiance that you love, a family that cares about you, the house that you live in, anything. And I'm like, how on earth could I ever repay that? It's almost see, it's almost like a, there's two cups and one's what you've given to the world and one's what the world has given to you. And like this cup of what the world has given to me is just overflowing in droves. And what I've given to the world, I'm like, fine, let's try and get a bit over there. And it starts with, of course, it starts with taking care of yourself. And then it goes to taking care of your family. Then it goes to the community and to the world. And as I go forward, I just hope that I can give more and more back to the community, more and more back to the world. And if I could give back to the world what the world has given to me, then I don't think I'll have another bad day of my life. But I think at the moment, that discrepancy is colossal.
You have talked about community. You have a very successful business up in Canada, which you have given back to the community. And you've got a wide variety of all walks of life inside your business. And that's something I want to talk about before we wrap up this podcast, is the fact that you wear several different hats outside of being the world's strongest man. You're a very, very good business guy. I've heard that from a few people. You have a business in Canada and one in Australia too. Is that correct? Am I saying that right?
Yes, no. Okay. Yeah, and even just what you were saying, that logically I can get around the fact that I'm working to give back. Emotionally, I can't get there.
Got you. And that's how the podcast is going on. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, when I was in Australia, my first placement was at a place called Longevity. And my whole idea going over to Australia was that Canada didn't have a great option for post-secondary education in exercising people with injuries and chronic conditions. And I wanted to go over to Australia, learn that, and bring it back. Funny enough, I sat in the first sort of introductory lecture, and this professor was Canadian. We paired up with people I'd never met before. This is in the first couple of days I was in Australia. And one of the questions he asked us to ask each other was, what are you doing here? What job do you hope to have? Yeah. After we had spoke to each other, the partner was supposed to say what the other person said, whatever. He says to my partner, did Mitchell say that he's going back to Canada? And the guy says yes. And the professor said, did you tell him that he's completely wasting his time here because this is not an accreditation in Canada?
Wow.
Yeah. And if I was myself today, I would have much better comeback. But all I did was sit there and get red and sweat. And I'm like, fuck, have I made a mistake? The response to that is, academics do not understand the value of building skills. Academics only understand the value of getting a piece of paper, which is not what you need. Anyway, so my first placement was at a place called Longevity, and it just aligned really well with everything that I wanted to pass over to Canada. The business partner and I, or sorry, the owner of that company and I got on really well. He's in my wedding party, and we partnered up and brought that over to Canada. So I've got a physical therapy clinic because that's what Americans understand. Up in Canada, we call it kinesiology. Essentially, it's exercise to treat injuries and chronic conditions. Or it's just a private space where if you've never exercised before, you're not comfortable going into a gym, you've got any extenuating circumstance that means that you need help with your exercise, then that's what we're there to do. And we do heaps of virtual stuff now. So we've got many clients in America. Mm. I put something out on my Instagram story every Monday. And I say, tell me your injury or chronic condition that's lasted longer than 4 weeks. People send the responses. I give quick advice as best I can. I send them all a link if they'd like to book in to have a chat. So a little small thing to try to give back there and values alignment wise. So I have that business. And then I have online business, which is do some coaching. I like to do group coaching. I think the one-on-one side for me is I don't get off as much on making a big impact for one person as I do a small impact for a lot of people. So I love the education side. So I'll do group coaching where every week we meet up, I'll make a slideshow, I'll go over a slideshow, whether it's principles of recovery or how to deadlift properly or mechanisms of injury recovery or how injuries happen, anything like that, and provide education. I'll take a group of people and we'll go through a 10, 12 week course where we're building their skills and teaching them how to fish. We have apparel, the Lift Heavy Be Kind apparel, and that's gone really well. We've got a bunch of new stuff that we're putting out there as well, and managing all that has been a huge challenge in terms of inventory and shipping things across borders and all of that. Got a good story about that as well. But yeah, that's business-wise, it's everything that we got going at the moment, on top of, like you said, personal brand, which for you and I both now, personal brand is number one. And people say I'm a good businessman, but I don't know. I don't know. It's almost like someone says you're the best strongman in the world. Objectively, that might be true, but fuck, I feel like I got a long way to go. I'm doing my best. I'd be incredibly proud of myself if you said 15 months ago when I moved back to Canada that I'd be doing this. There was a lot of concern around, I don't know anyone in my hometown anymore, and you're opening the clinic and online business and strongman. What's going to happen? I actually moved back. I had those three things, the online business, the clinic, and my strongman career before World Strongest Man, before anything.
All three.
And yeah. And I said, do you know what? I'm going to give them all a crack because surely one of these will fail. At least one.
And how many didn't?
We've got no failures at the moment. So you're like, wow. Okay.
But keep aiming that bar higher, bro. Put the bar higher.
Yeah. But yeah, that's everything that I've got going on outside of Strongman. In terms of the clinic, I'm becoming less involved in the day to day and mostly just operating as the owner, as the manager, if you will, when I'm around. Online business, it's the art of doing things that aren't aren't a drain on your time and that are worth your time and still giving people really good value. So that's always a constant thing to manage. And then trying to fit training in around that and trying to take care of sponsors around that and trying to connect with people like you around that. It's huge. And after winning World's Strongest Man, the desire to win wasn't the primary objective before, but it's certainly smaller now than it was 6 months ago. And it's not that I'm training less. I'm training just as hard, probably harder because I love to train. But I think in the sport, if I never accomplish another thing, I'd be happy. And just for context, I said before World's Strongest Man, we came out with a documentary, and I said, I don't need to win World's Strongest Man. It's the ultimate want. So that attitude has got me to be the world champion. So I think people will probably misinterpret this and go, oh, okay, he's done competing. He's probably not going to work as hard.
Yeah.
No, if I was competing against me, I'd be twice as scared that I'm operating so happy.
I think there's a rule of thumb. You keep saying that you don't care where you place, you keep winning. I think that's the thing. Keep telling everybody, I don't care what I place this year.
I don't, but I care about improving. Yeah. The whole journey started as objective self-improvement. Part of that to relate to clients. Part of that keep my mental health in check. And like I told you before, you don't have this massive jump in capacity and capability and then just plateau forever, meaning that there's going to be a law of diminishing returns. But I think next year I could be 10% better. 10% better than I was this year. And the year after, I think I could be 5% better than that. The year after, I think I could be 2% better than that. I think give you me at my peak, and like, of course, peak strength numbers won't come up 25%, but I think I'll be 25% better as a strongman all up. If you ran every strongman in the world across 100 events, I think I would have 25% more points in 3-4 years' time than I do today. Wow. So that's what I'm chasing. Yeah. I'm not chasing wins. Because if you're chasing wins, and all of a sudden there's some guy from Yugoslavia who happens to be just absolutely incredible. Am I going to beat myself up over the fact that some dude's just incredible? And then you get into this weird competition where you can't be happy for anyone else and anything that anyone else does because now I'm cheering for you to mess something up. And no, like I did 7 reps last time. I want to do 8 this time. And that's going to make me feel good about myself, whether you do 2 or you do 15. Yeah, and just keep pushing forward and keep doing that. And that's my attitude. And I think I have the same attitude as a lot of everyday people, a lot of everyday people in strongman or in bodybuilding, just get a little bit better. Mm. And it's just for me, I'm very lucky that takes me to World's Strongest Man. But just the same, I think other people should feel very lucky that it takes them to the best in the state or it takes them to the best in their city or just makes them a stronger person than they were before.
Is there, listening to this podcast, I think a lot of people are going to get a whole new perspective of you that maybe just have the 15-second reel. And also there's a lot of people that will just have more of a higher value in you than ever before, especially since you've spoke about a lot of driving issues and stuff. Was there one thing that we have not mentioned on the podcast that you would like the fans to know about Mitchell Hooper?
Well, we've covered a lot though, haven't we? Man.
In closing.
Yeah.
Of his one statement that you would like to be known for, or put it, flag into the ground. This is the closing statement of the podcast before you plug everything.
I would say whatever you're doing, whatever you're trying to accomplish, just know where you're going and know what you're doing it for, or else you'll get lost. You'll get too up, too down. If you always have what I call the North Star, you got to have the North Star, and whatever that is, then ups, downs, trials, tribulations, keep heading in that direction and you'll be surprised where you get.
And lastly, why do you do it all?
I just want to be the best version of myself. And the best version of myself gives as much back to the community and back to the world as possible. And being the best strongman in the world is not particularly important to me, but what is particularly important is what you're able to do with that. And that's what I'm chasing, is just to have the biggest impact possible. I'm not a religious person whatsoever. I believe that what happens to you after you die is the same thing as before you were born. And so I might have 40 years, 60 years, 70 years more of life, but the 27 years that I've had so far, you're not getting back. And I don't believe you're getting reincarnated. I don't believe it's an assessment of heaven or hell. I believe the only thing you leave behind is the impact that you make on people and the memories that you give to people, the way you make people feel. And so the culmination of that's what your life is. And that's what your life's going to be remembered for. And 60 years from now, no one cares that I won World's Strongest Man this year, but a hell of a lot of people could care if I help keep their gym open, if I inspire them to get a bit healthier. Of course, Ashley's going to care if we get married. I help to create a comfortable life for her and we form a family and all of that. I just believe that you need to, in the time on the earth, you need to make as much impact as possible. You need to do as much as you possibly can, because in the end, you are nothing.
That's a big, powerful statement coming from a man who's achieved so much and on a destiny and on a path to achieve so much more, my friend. I'm excited to not only be at your first World's Strongest Man, but also...
You're my good luck charm.
I am. We'll have to keep on doing skits the day before every final, okay? That's the deal. So if anybody sees us now in every location, me and Mitchell Roper just lifting each other up dancing, that I'm doing the sacred dance around him.
It's game time.
It's game time. But it's a pleasure. It's a privilege. Somebody that, obviously, we've got to know each other since the World's Strongest Man event. And I've also got to sit back and watch now how... And what you've done with this title. It truly is amazing, mate. It is a door that's showed to you, and you truly have to kick it through. It's the same for all these sports, including myself. Yep. You're enthusiastic to get your message out, and you're consistent in your path of doing what you do and with flying it with a passion. So I'm proud to have you here on the Straight of the Lair. Look forward to having you in the future in the new studio. Is there anything you want to say in parting on the podcast before you wrap it up?
No, just in parting. I respect you a hell of a lot more for what you've done with seven titles than winning seven titles. Yeah, I look at your career pathway, and I think we said this before, I think you could have accomplished what you've accomplished post-career with two titles or three titles or maybe even one title. And so looking at someone like you and what you've been able to do gives a pathway. And the further up you go, the fewer number of people you have to look up to in that context. So thank you for being that person. And thank you for giving something to drive towards. Because if I've won World's Strongest Man once and done what I've done business-wise once, and I'm content looking at you and what you've done, it pales in comparison. So I look forward to being not continuing your vision, but chasing you along the way, let's call it.
And I will live through your... I wouldn't say live through you, literally, because there's no strength in the world that could fraction. But I will be excited to see you do all you're doing, and more so witness what is opening and the doors are opening for you outside of the sport. So congratulations on becoming the World's Strongest Man. And yeah, like I said, there's so much more to be achieved. And the world is, there's cliches, right? The world is your oyster. Mm. And you truly, if you have the mentality and the drive and the chase to go after things, you can truly chase anything down. Whether you achieve it or not, it's the chase that it's all about. And you are the chase, my friend. I think you're the epitome of the chase. And I truly appreciate you being open and honest in this podcast and laying it all out there, my friend. So, Mitchell Hooper, Straight Out Lair, out.